awake. They're talking loud and laughing. They don't notice anything. I realize I know them. This is Earth, and I'm in school. And it's just another day in the ages. Another chance to check out the mall. And it's just another day in the ages. Another day with your back to the wall. There was once a time when people were awake. Then they died or went to sleep, or they just took what they could take. Going nowhere, think they're all getting ahead, and everything around us is dying or it's dead. And it's just another day in the ages, another chance to get or be got. You did a great job, all the people.
And that was the San Francisco Mime Troupe singing from Ripped Van Winkle, an ancient musical again from the late 80s, which I occasionally dredge up from time to time. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, on your FM dial or digital doodah. I'm your host, Bathrobe's Pierre Robert Norris, and with us in the studio we have Randy Marr, who I mentioned a moment ago. He is an attorney who has been observing the local civil rights scene here in Santa Cruz. And, well, Randy, I guess you've got some particular feelings or thoughts on homelessness.
Well, I do, and I'd like to thank you, Robert, for inviting me today, this afternoon, in honor of Free Radio Santa Cruz. And you, Robert, I left my tie at home today.
And you left your tie-dye at home as well, I see.
I did leave my tie-dye at home, but I'm wearing some color here today. And it's good to be here. I'd like to start just by a little statement that I think is very telling of our society and the way things are. And that is, better is a poor man walking in his integrity and dignity than a perverse double dealer, though he be rich.
Proverbs 28:6.
That's right. And, you know, Robert, my thoughts, you know, both personal and professional as an attorney, are that homelessness is not a crime. And our society has, for many years, tried to legislate it to be such. There have been Supreme Court decisions, both on state level and federal level, dealing with the issue of homelessness regarding various types of statutes, which go back many years, like the vagrancy statutes and those sorts of things. And many of those statutes have been overturned by higher courts. You know, our Constitution provides for the pursuit of happiness and life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And, you know, that is a meaning that the court has interpreted to overturn many of these statutes that various legislatures have tried to enact.
And actually, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, I believe, is in the Declaration of Independence, which isn't really a legal document, but the Constitution does provide protections, does it not?
Certainly, the right to free travel and certainly
freedom of association, freedom of speech, freedom of press, protection from, I guess, the 14th Amendment, due process protection. Substantive due process means you can't treat one person one way and another the other way and deny them certain basic fairness rights.
Right. In the 14th Amendment, it deals with equal protection under the law. And the issue of homelessness, you know, governments continue to try to to enact legislation that would limit our freedoms. And I think the Constitution is a wonderful document that, at least in theory, protects the civil liberties of all Americans, rich and poor.
Well, about that, I mean, isn't kind of apropos here to remember what A.J. Liebling, who was the grand old man of the press, used to say, that there's freedom in the press in America for everyone lucky enough to own one. And similarly, in the U.S., there is freedom to have your rights protected for anyone who has the financial resources to hire a good legal team.
Well, that's often true. However, there are various legal foundations throughout the United States that is their very goal, is to protect the civil liberties, American Civil Liberties Union and many others that do take up the cause for those that couldn't otherwise afford representation.
You know, I would believe that more and take more reassurance from that if I weren't aware of the positions of the local American Civil Liberties Union, its failure to attempt to end daily abusive police practices against the poor and homeless in Santa Cruz, and the fact that legal services, legal aid locally, does give some help to welfare moms who are trying to fight attempts to blame them and slash them and get them off the rolls, and to some extent helps some tenants at some points. You really don't have a lot of money being put into legal protection of the poor, at least as far as I know.
Well, you know, as far as I know, the American Civil Liberties Union is it's privately funded through donations. And as for legal aid, it's certainly they are limited in terms of funding and in terms of the scope of their ability for legal representation. It is primarily limited to certain landlord-tenant issues that they can assist with in public assistance problems, Social Security and AFDC and that sort of thing.
You've appeared before, you mentioned you had appeared before Judge Kelsey. You're a practicing attorney in California. Have you been involved in any homeless cases or cases involving poor people that you think would be of particular interest to our listeners?
I have not. As an attorney, in our code of ethics, which are considered and observed by some attorneys, obviously not all, I have represented indigent clients, if that's a fair word, not to insult anyone, citizens that didn't have the funds to representation, but that representation has been done primarily in the areas of criminal defense and family law, which is my primary area of practice.
Well, let me ask you, as a person, how long have you been in the Santa Cruz area?
Well, I've had a connection to the Santa Cruz area for about 7 years. I was formerly a resident of Monterey County for the past 25 years. But in terms of Santa Cruz, it's probably the last 7 years. I've just recently, in the past year, moved to Santa Cruz, and I'm here full-time now.
What do you see about Santa Cruz compared with Monterey County? Are things worse for the poor, better? Are you, because you're not poor yourself, it looks like. I mean, at least you got on some clean socks. I noticed that. You look pretty well dressed. You're clean shaven. Of course, poor people can do that too, though it's sometimes harder particularly if you're homeless. What is the difference between Monterey County? Is there any difference between Monterey County and Santa Cruz County?
Oh, I think there's a huge difference. It's quite a distance across the bay, and the social economic climate in Monterey is very different than it is here in Santa Cruz. Monterey is a very conservative town, lots and lots of wealthy people, lots of money, and the complexion of Monterey compared to Santa Cruz is very different. I mean, Santa Cruz, I think, is a more liberal community. I guess what I would say is that you had mentioned police abuse, for example. And I have a background that has involved certain incidents of police abuse in Monterey County.
Before we go on to that, let me just quickly comment, because I do want to talk to you about that. But the it's interesting and ironic to me that, indeed, as you point out, Santa Cruz has a reputation for being more liberal. It has a huge university here. And yet, it is Santa Cruz that has the far worse sleeping ban law than Monterey County, where I'm told it's actually possible to sleep on some beaches and in some areas if you're poor and homeless. This is what Free Radio Monterey broadcaster James Mason told us about a month and a half ago. Now, I'm not sure how much in touch he is, and indeed I'd like to get some more information from those of you who know Monterey County. But it certainly would kind of, if it's true what I'm saying, it fits in with the idea that it is the liberals who are cracking down on the homeless, whether we're talking about Agnes and Willie Brown in San Francisco, whether we're talking about the so-called liberal Santa Monica City Council, or whether we're talking about liberals in Berkeley who almost, there was a very razor-thin stopping of the new sitting ban about a month ago, but it was the so-called liberal council that put this sitting ban into effect before, and until it was overturned in 1997 by a more liberal council, or a better council. I mean, the word liberal is becoming suspect to me. But that's just a comment I wanted to make. Let's get back to your history with police misconduct.
Well, I think I'd like to respond to what you were suggesting as it relates between Monterey and Santa Cruz. This is a topic of great interest to me. I had a friend who is a professional who faced homelessness. This is a person that was educated and at one point had money, owned a home, those sorts of things. And
both Monterey and Santa Cruz County person?
That's correct. And this person, through my understanding and watching it all happen, it had a lot to do with alcohol and drug abuse, which is certainly not the issue in every person's case that faces homelessness. But I did want to respond to what you had said earlier, which is that Monterey's being conservative or Santa Cruz being liberal. You're obviously much more up on the topic, although it is a topic of interest to me. I do know, I did do some research for a group of people in Monterey with regard to Monterey City's ordinance having to do with sleeping in vehicles within the city limits. I'm not all that familiar with the county ordinances, but the city ordinance of the city of Monterey forbids sleeping in vehicles. I know from talking to some of these folks that I did some investigation for that at night they would be woke up, they would be ordered to move, to leave. So the city of Monterey is certainly very conservative in their approach to the issue.
And probably the city of Carmel is even worse.
That would be my expectation, although I have never reviewed their ordinances.
What about police misconduct? And you were kind of heading in that direction. Or did you want to talk more about this professional friend of yours who was facing homelessness?
Well, police misconduct is of interest to me. I was raised with a police officer dad who was a police officer for 30 years, somebody that I had great respect for because I believe that my father had great respect for the civil liberties of people. However, in Monterey County, there was a situation where there was a team of police officers and they were systematically targeting homeless people.
When was this?
This is probably 6, 7, 8 years ago, and several of these police officers were investigated internally by their department and ultimately terminated. One was prosecuted in federal court, although I think it was it wasn't much of a prosecution. He never went to jail, as someone else that committed a similar act probably would have been.
What this reminds me of, I was just watching the old movie Z. Do you remember Z by Costa Gavras? This is a film. Well, this is a film about political intrigue in Greece, and it's a story where the generals at the top engineer the assassination of a leftist politician. And as a consequence, eventually there's a sort of an honest public prosecutor who draws them all into court, and he indicts them all for murder. But the guys at the top get off with nothing. There's administrative sanction for the police officers, and of course the two fall guys get brief jail sentences. And I think The person watching with me said that this reminds me of Santa Cruz, and of course our situation here.
Well, you know, actually in this incident that happened several years ago in Monterey County, the police chief was forced into resignation over this very issue that I've been discussing, because apparently the FBI got involved in doing a civil rights investigation. There was a lot of media attention, and ultimately, a year and a half later, these officers were dealt with.
Do you remember the details of the case at all?
Well, I prefer not going into the details for reasons that I was rather involved in the case.
What would a person who is looking at from the outside, from the media, say? Were homeless people beaten up? Were they simply jailed unfairly? Was their property taken? What was the nature of the kind of abuses?
This was primarily a brutality case, excessive force case. Now, it's interesting because Santa Cruz had a similar case, and I'm guessing about between 10 and 15 years ago, and the story in that case was there was a group of Santa Cruz police officers.
You're talking about Code Blue from the early 80s, I believe.
I believe that was the case, and it's interesting because a number of officers were prosecuted for felonies in that case for beating up what they termed to be trolls, and these were homeless people. Again, I don't recall the number of officers, but there were a number of officers that were prosecuted for felonies, and they were all acquitted.
Exactly. I was about to grab the mic to mention that.
Right. But what's interesting to me is that one of those officers, who I obviously won't identify by name, was later hired in Monterey County for a law enforcement agency in Monterey County. And he lasted, I don't know, a year or something, and they finally dismissed him. But it's interesting that an officer could be internally investigated and terminated. These officers were terminated from the city of Santa Cruz based on the internal investigation. Obviously, there's different standards of evidence and requirements in terms of a job action versus a criminal prosecution. They were acquitted of a criminal case. They did lose their jobs, and yet a Monterey County law enforcement agency, knowing full well what had taken place here in Santa Cruz, hired this officer to do the same job.
We're talking to Randy Marr, attorney and observer of the homeless scene here in Santa Cruz. And, you know, my reaction to that is exactly the same thing happened in San Francisco a year or two ago in the Aaron Williams slaying, he was killed and there was a pepper spraying and he died on the way to the hospital, and the officer who kicked him and who pepper sprayed him and who screwed up in other respects had previously been evicted from the Oakland police force for excessive brutality and was immediately picked up by the San Francisco police force, which shows a couple things. It shows me that maybe what the police departments are doing is winking at each other and saying, yeah, we may have to get rid of you because of these requirements in the IA department, the Internal Affairs Department, but there'll be somebody else to pick you up. In fact, we'll guarantee it. We got a whole network and a conveyor belt that'll roll you from one community to the next. And of course, I'm speculating here. I have no evidence there's any such conveyor belt, and we're just talking about a couple of cases. Go ahead.
It's very interesting, and I have rather strong opinions on this particular issue. I look at Los Angeles Police Department, and I practiced down in Los Angeles for a couple of years and had the opportunity to really kind of take a close look. And again, you know, the background with a father having been a police officer, and I hesitate to mention this, but I used to be a police officer. So
you're under arrest. Beat them up, boys.
But you know, I took my job very seriously in the sense that it was that my job was a job of service in protecting the community. And I was a police officer for about 7 years, and in 7 years I never ever used my stick to hit anyone with. I had one, but I never used it.
In New York, let's say, engage in intimate contact with a prisoner, as recently was done with a guy in jail. He was, I think, butt-fucked with a nightstick so brutally that it became a national scandal in New York.
Pretty sick behavior on the part of people that we're supposed to trust and respect. And, you know, my feelings ran so far opposite of many of the my fellow workers, my fellow police officers. The fact is I have toward the end of my career, I was involved in some internal investigations. But I wanted to comment about the Los Angeles Police Department, because I think it's kind of, although it's a very large department, it's kind of a microcosm of the larger problem throughout the United States. Daryl Gates, you know, and I don't mind using his name, and to me, he's arrogant, and he's the enemy of the underprivileged. Anyone that is not living, let's say, west of, Harbor Freeway. Anybody that lives in South Central or East LA needs to really beware of that department. And the reason being is that, you know, the other side of the coin is I understand that police officers sometimes have to use force in doing their job. You know, my father taught me something or told me something a long time ago, and he says, you know, if someone that I'm arresting wants to fight, then I have to control him and I have to put him in handcuffs and take him to jail. However, I'm not paid to hurt people. And, you know, I've heard of cases where people were drug out of cars that were locked, backs of caged police units, handcuffed and beat with flashlights. In Los Angeles, Daryl Gates set a tone with his command staff that allowed for the brutality to take place in that town. Rodney King was not an aberration, as Daryl Gates described. Rodney King, I believe I have his name, Rodney King was a daily occurrence in Los Angeles. And the people that live in South Central and the people that live in East Los Angeles are real aware of that. And I think maybe the O.J. Simpson case was a response to that. It wasn't a vote so much in O.J.'s defense as it was a vote against the LAPD and their lack of trust and respect for that department.
This is fascinating. Unfortunately, we have 2 minutes left in our show. I'm wondering, is it possible to get you back in here next week, possibly for a longer period of time, to pursue this subject?
I think we could discuss that. Depending on my schedule, we probably can arrange something.
We're going to negotiate the return of Randy Marr, who's an attorney and a local observer, and he's admitted it on the air, folks. This is a cop in the station, so come and get me, Free Radio Santa Cruz Collective.
I do want to say that as well as being a recent fan of Free Radio Santa Cruz, I am a big-time fan of K-Pig. So any cop that listens to K-Pig can't be all bad. And I'm not a cop anymore. I'm a criminal defense attorney.
Good point. So
one more thing. Just for your listeners' knowledge, cops sometimes lie in court.
No way. You know, this attempt to discredit the police department I find shocking. Obviously, a kind of a sour grapes reaction on your part. Well, look, I'm afraid we're reaching the end of our time. We've got the next talk show hosts, Jen and Phil, I guess, are right behind me, and I'm going to turn the show over to them after this next song. You've been listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz's Bathrobes Pierce Broadside, Civil Rights for the Poor, and How It Is to Be Out There on the Streets. We will return Thursday at 6 on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3. Please join us then. And I again encourage you to definitely come to the September 15th Civic Auditorium, 7 o'clock, to Just Say No to the Boardwalk Giveaway. You might want to check out the Police Review Board meeting and raise a little ruckus there, 5:30 tomorrow at City Hall. Hey, and in the meantime, remember me. I'm your host, Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norse. You can catch me on the Huff line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-HUFF. Anything you want to broadcast can definitely be broadcast there. And I forgot to mention it, FoodNet Bombs is serving food even as we speak at the town clock. Go down there. It's healthy. It's tasty. It's yummy. It's free. Stay tuned.
Lots of temptation to be.
was with me, he was something I didn't care anymore. This time it's ready for Christmas, by sweeping the streets of the poor. Jesus with me, he was
I'm serious. I got home. I had to come back and flip the tape.
Coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. Civil Rights for the Poor on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, 11 to 1:40. Stay with us for a special focus on the beach flats with reports from around the country at anti-homeless laws attacking Philadelphia and the Birmingham homeless, and more. Joel, of course, finally found our theme song again after it had been mislaid. The tip of the hat to Skidmark Bob Duran, who found it hidden under one of the tables behind one of the nooks and crannies here in the studio. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM on your FM dial. This is Free Radio in Santa Cruz, your radio, call-in radio. And if you want to comment on anything you hear on this show or something you think should be heard on this show, want to add something, give us a call at 427-3772 in our studio here, 427-3772, to be on the air live with me and my guests. But the guests we're going to have for the moment are on tape. We've actually got some good stuff we've been doing. Some tapes have been piling up. About a month and a half ago, we took the tour of the beach flats with activist Jane Bear, who has an encyclopedic knowledge of what's going on in the beach flats in terms of what's happening with this house, what's happening with that property, the history here, the prospective future there. I mean, it's amazing. She knows everything. And so we're going to join her in progress in this tour, which I think is still possible. She still does these tours in case you want your own tour to go through the beach flats and to see exactly what is contemplated for destruction under the beach flats boardwalk giveaway, as I call it, or the Canfield Council Seaside Company sellout. That is really a done deal and will probably be ratified on October believe it's the 4th, or is it the 6th? It's one of those two dates, so perhaps my producer will get in touch with me and give me the specifics on that. Certainly the next hearing is October 1st, when the final public comment period will be listened to, or I should say, it will be allowed and ignored by the Rotkin-Matthews Council majority at the Santa Cruz City Council. But Jane Baer has done a wonderful job, and we're finally going to hear her good work. Actually, a video is made of some of this presentation, which hopefully at some point can be shown to the public, because it really shows you the houses. I mean, you can hear her talking about them, and that certainly is important to get the information, and that's what we're going to play now. But to really catch the dimension of this, you have to see each particular house, the so-called rundown slums that are being bulldozed to give Canfield a fatter slice of the pie in the beach boardwalk. Then after that, we're going to hear from activist Phil Baer, Jane's husband, giving us an update on what's been happening at the Santa Cruz City Council meetings, of which there were two last week, huge affairs in the Civic Auditorium, where probably the most people on any issue I have ever seen came to speak in the decade and a half that I've been participating at City Council meeting. Decade, really. This is the most number of speakers I've seen at the mics there. Quite impressive. And the majority of them, the heavy majority of them, all against the Beach Flats plan. And those who are not, many of them recruited by the Seaside Company to come on down with their little green stickers that say yes on the beach plan. So Phil's going to give us an analysis of that after we hear Jane talk about, well, describe the Beach Flats house after house that is slated to be torn down by this redevelopment rampant kind of gone riot plan that Kennedy is kind of giving us as his goodbye legacy. You know, I'm sure we're glad that he's going, but we're not glad the kind of mess he's trying to leave behind for us to clean up. Let's hear Jane Baer giving us a walk through the Beach Flats.
The historic house was built by William Wilson in 1904. As you can see, it's in the vernacular style, California bungalow style.
And, it's got a nice garden, a couple of vegetable patches here, and yes, a tree. But it has this funky truck in the yard, and a couple, and there's a dog attached to a tree, which I think most of the trailer probably fired in the camping.
The mom and dad and baby who live here know how to live in a little old-fashioned fishing village house like this. So I think the residents match their abode. Myself.
Now, will these people get alternative housing if they are dumped?
Not the type of folks who live in government projects.
So who will get alternative housing? Who is being promised alternative housing?
Well, some people, a token number of people, will be offered a place in a affordable housing project that will be built within the next 4 years. But they won't necessarily, they don't need to be the people who would be displaced when their houses are demolished. Now, while we're at it, that green log house, log cabin would have to be demolished for widening of the street, and the White House on the other side of it. Did you want to?
Sure, let's check
direct
it out.
Direct that way. We're going to go this way, but that's just part of the plan, is to take those houses, those two single-family houses out, demolish them. And the fellow who lived in the green log cabin used to fish out his back porch and dock his little rowboat at the back porch, so it tells you how much closer the river was until the boardwalk took the 3rd Street parking lot that was the river. This is 3rd Street. This is the 3rd Street.
For this 3rd Street to be realigned. What does that mean, realigned?
That means that the street is abandoned for boardwalk expansion, and then the tourist traffic route and parking and more amusement park rides, the tourist route and parking for the amusement park rides and the area of amusement park rides is what is going in where the
So this is all going to be amusement park rides here?
Yeah.
Well, what's wrong with that? That'll be fun, man. We can ride the, of course it'll cost us, but now what about this place, 165?
Frank Orange House that was built in 1920. It's a single family house and lived in by people who also know how to live in their historic resource house, as you can see, with their little scarecrow there.
Yeah, the scarecrow on the porch here.
Yeah.
To scare away the Seaside Company, or?
No comment. It's up to date.
I see. Now,
anyway, the people would be thrown out, the house would be torn down, demolished, completely demolished, and the land on which these houses are would be rezoned from residential zone to more commercial zone. So that not only is it demolishing...
Stay tuned as the tape turns over and we hear more of Jane Bear giving a tour of the beach flats.
Land to house density that's outrageous, not tenement, and it would, of course, all this would go to commercial, and it's not going to go back. I might add, there's no future generation in which the Boardwalk or whoever they sell their commercial, their private company to in the future is ever going to give back land as their private company's business.
Now, Jane, across the street, you have a parking lot. Is it a city parking lot?
No, that is purported to belong to the Seaside. That is, they collect money on parking people there. But it, in fact, has clouded title because it's supposed to be owned by the public because it is...
on an estuary thing?
Land underneath it is a filled-in estuary. But it was... within the tidelands when California became a state.
So this is so just collecting money from it now.
I'd like to describe this house, 161 3rd Street.
Right.
This is the Lindemann home. And the Lindemanns were early settlers in Santa Cruz. This house was built in 1920 by Claire Lindemann's father, and that's Claire Lindemann's Rosie's.
Uh-huh.
And I love her a lot. And her son recently passed away. Her son and granddaughter occupy the house now. Her granddaughter and her granddaughter's husband and their baby live here now, so it's still within the family. The Lindemann, of course you can see that it's well kept. They owned Lindy Court, Lindemann Apartments, all these houses through here, including that fourplex, were owned and built by the Lindemann family, the early Santa Cruz settlers, early 3rd Street settlers. And
what do they think of this realignment themselves?
They're not overwhelmingly
enthused by it.
Yeah, happy by it. So they usually have the car parked out with some insulting bumper sticker about public people and public offices. But okay.
I see. Now, what about this large field we're walking past?
This used to be Lindy Court. As Claire Lindemann got. Lindy was named after the Lindemann. They named it Lindy Court anyway. And as Claire got older and didn't want to keep it up, they sold Lindy Court to the Boardwalk. Boardwalk evicted the tenant. And
what year was that, remember?
That was about 7 years ago. Yeah. Probably about 7 years ago.
And it tore down.
In the last decade.
Uh-huh. It tore down the apartments.
Tore down the apartments, and now. That's true of this vacant land in here, and we're seeing the walk around this block, but these houses that you're looking at, the rear of the houses, are more units, more houses that would be torn down for this first bite, that is the 3rd Street realignment.
How many are going to be torn down in the first bite?
23.
And how many of those are Canfield houses?
6. There are, there are 17 units that the Boardwalk owns. There are 4 vacant lots the Boardwalk does not own within this configuration here, and one up the street that's part of the 3rd Street realignment. Mm-hmm. And then there's an owner-occupied single-family house that we'll see around the corner. And then there's a fiveplex that's owned by
So mostly we're talking about Canfield tearing down his own. The house is already purchased?
Yes, recently purchased for this.
Any comments on did he get them like at a discount?
God, yes. He told people that, showed them the plan. Oh, this plan is going to go through. Oh, you're going to be first. We're condemnation, MHMN. Better get out while you can. And, you know, some people who say are retired and or for whatever reason, you know, don't really understand redevelopment law and all the intricacies.
That's fair to say. So how much do you think that the average, what percentage below the market rate did he get?
A quarter to a half.
Wow. Should we trespass and cross the property this way?
Yeah, we'll pass them that I would put in that category. Should we cross this street? It'll just take us about 5 minutes and show the site for the 125-foot roller coaster.
All right, let's check out the... We're approaching the... Now we're trespassing on Campbell property. Actually, we're just crossing.
It's actually the Selly property right here.
The Selly property, Campbell still does not own?
He doesn't own it.
Large lot on the corner where 3rd Street turns off of...
This is where I'd like to see perhaps a low-income housing project or even an Indian encampment, as a tribal member of City Council, if they could have a recreation of the original Ohlone settlement. So, and it's all residential zoned land. It was pieces such as the Lindy Court where...
Now, is this UCLA company housing here?
This is owner-occupied. This is the only owner-occupied house. It would have to come down in the first... This is Park Place.
Crossing Park Place near the boardwalk.
Yes, this is 117 Park Place.
Right.
Owned by the Simas family, Simas Pichot.
What about this stuff here?
And this, my husband was the property manager, so we know very well how recently it was. Real nice tenants. Real nice woman whose husband was the head of the music department at UC. And... but she was getting on in years, and her hubby died, and so in the last few months she sold it to the Seaside Company for much less than she would have otherwise got.
It's run down. Could this be one of those Seaside Company units that somehow Scott Kennedy overlooked?
No, this is an example of the Seaside Company taking nicely kept up apartments with nice tenants in it and getting the tenants to leave. Maybe they didn't evict them. Maybe they did the same as they did with the owner of just showing them the plan. Oh, it's going to happen. Oh, you better get out while it's, you know, this is, look at how the line goes through your house.
Have you actually talked to tenants who told you that this is what happened? People came to you and came to them and said, better move because you're going to get, you know, you get a good deal now or else later you...
I spoke to the brother of one of them who said his sister didn't want to move.
Right.
This is the Hashimoto 5 units, and Ben and Doris Hashimoto refused to sell, and they're not going to turn over, and they absolutely do not understand why they need to lose their property for
the slums that Michael Hernandez has been talking about.
That's
the slums of Calcutta, right?
They're nice people. Nice people own them. They keep them up. They like their apartments, and nice people live in them. Always have had nice people living in them. Not a hit of crime any place around here.
We're
walking up Park Place. As I said, they really won't sell. Don't want to sell. This is a single family house. You guys probably don't know you live in a historic resource, but that's a historic resource according to...
You live in a historic house. That's what she says.
No, it's true.
It's true.
According to the historic preservation...
Tell them about it. They're interesting. You want to know what it's about? Why it's historic? Tell us why it's historic, Jane.
Because it's a California bungalow, cottage, built about 1920. There's a meeting up the street at 212 Park Place about the beach area plan. Did you get a leaflet about it?
They're trying to turn on all the houses and get everybody away.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I'm trying to tell them.
Hang in there. Go ahead. Looks like there are a lot of little kids, a lot of Hispanic family there, that they perhaps have trouble renting in a different area because there's so many of them, right?
Yeah. And this is another bungalow that's historic because of its style and has nice folks living in it. It's it's the same log cabin, recreation of the log cabin that's considered historic. That's a Cape Cod cottage and was built in the same years. but that one is considered historic because of its log cabin type, while the Cape Cod cottage is not considered historic for this area because the style was developed in Cape Cod, while this style was developed in Vancouver.
Well, it all looks pretty neat. I mean, there's a little bit of glitter in the yard, but we also have these two really unfashionable cars parked here. Perhaps if they had some male Mercedes possibly, might be a better deal.
You see? We could all just bleach our skin down here and, you know, otherwise look like surfers or
maybe
something.
Maybe we could wear Seaside Company uniforms, you know, and properly...
Oh, and this duplex here, the owner, which, wants nothing to do with the plan.
140 Park Place.
140 Park Place, and as you can see, it's a lovely duplex.
Nice chimes, some nice flowers there on the vines.
Nice chimes.
Even the paint looks, I don't like the color much, but it's not quite.